Let's do it.
Sure.
All right. Hello, BattleTech fans. Welcome to another episode of Renegade HPG. This is Travis, and my guest today is the voice of BattleTech himself, Tex from the Black Pants Legion. With the help of his crew at BPL, Tex has been bringing the BattleTech universe to life with his signature baritone voice for over 2 years now. With over 35 years of material spread across tens of thousands of sourcebook pages, that universe can be an intimidating one to dive into. Fortunately, the lore videos Tex and his team have been producing have ensured that is an easy and incredibly entertaining dive to make. We'll talk about making content for BattleTech fans and anything else we can think of to celebrate this awesome universe in today's episode. Tex, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me, sir. I deeply appreciate it.
My pleasure. And I, you know, it's been a ton of fun watching the videos that you've been out there. I am definitely not one that has time to kind of expansively read the source books, and my memory does not work in a way where I retain information that I read incredibly well. And so it's been a blast just kind of sitting there and kind of revisiting and learning a lot of those historical facts of BattleTech. But it's been fun. When I was looking back, it looked like the awesome video was the kind of your first dive into that. Was that your first lore video that you guys put out?
That was our test. That was just to see what we could do, because I'm just kind of a grade D YouTuber. I'm much beyond the reach of the algorithm and many other things, but it was just to try something different format-wise, so it was short and sweet. I had a shitty microphone. I had a shitty audio setup, and I just went for it. I had the encouragement of friends, and I had people to prove wrong, and that was the seed from which all of this has sprung.
Awesome. And you, that was a test. Did you anticipate just doing one and kind of seeing how it goes, or did you have a couple kind of, you know, in queue and ready to go and just... you know, for your enjoyment as well as everyone else's?
I principally try to make things for my own enjoyment, because I find that if you don't like what you do, it becomes a job.
Yeah.
So I had a few I wanted to talk about, and, you know, the awesome and the Atlas, and then of course the Urban Mech, because how can you not talk about the fucking Urby? That's the mascot of the setting. That's the fans' beating heart mascot of the setting. And you know, there's the mascot that BattleTech wants to sell you, which is the Warhammer, or in the old BattleTech it was the Marauder was on everything. And then with the clans, it was, of course, the Mad Cat. The Mad Cat became the poster boy on everything. And then you look at the fans, which one do they want? They say, I want the fucking trash can with the autocannon on it. That's the one I want. And it's like a little pug dog, you know. It's derpy looking, but you just want to love it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to touch on those. And then it got extensively more in depth when we started doing the Ken Burns style stuff.
Yeah. Well, I heard you make kind of side comments on the amount of production time and duration that goes in there, but to just kind of share with everybody, you know, an idea for something like, you know, Battle of Tukiet up to, you know, and, you know, the two parts, you know, a collapse of the Star League. What goes into making these episodes for you guys?
That's a really good question. Well, let's say the Battle of Tukiet is going to surprise people, because believe it or not, you're the first person to ask this. We turned the Battle of Tukiet around in 19 days from start to finish. I was still writing drafts 3 days before we finished it. Mm-hmm. And it was madness. That's like laying down a train rail while the train's running at 100 miles an hour. You know, like the Wallace and Gromit thing, where you're just like about to go off the track, and you're like, "Fuck, come on, let's do this." And it was so dumb. And that happened because I was like, "Wait a second, oh my god, it's the anniversary of Tukiet. Oh shit!" And I called up Mike, and I was like, "Mike, gotta do this video by then." And rather than tell me to, you know, fuck off, he was like, "Yeah, let's do it." So we did that. But after that, we decided, look, we're going to establish a method that is efficient, that allows both of us to work on our own timetable. Because Mike has a day job and I have a day job, and we both are very hard workers. So this is kind of a hobby, and we want to make sure that we actually do things like, you know, sleep. And That's important. And so one of the things we started to do is we said, okay, first phase is me. And it's all my to blame. If you see a video taking a little longer, that's me. Because I have to read everything. And then when I start reading, I start going down these little tangential areas, like with the Mackie episode, where I start going, okay, I can't just say, and then for no goddamn reason, there's battle mechs. I have to go, why are there battle mechs? Well, if there's battle mechs, there has to be a reason for the doctrines to change in the military industrial complex. So then I start getting into the military industrial complex, and then I start getting into the rulers of the House Cameron and the changing pace of war in the inner sphere. And then why did war change? Well, the Tintavel died. And then, okay, well, that leads into the Ares Convention, which then stagnates war and makes war a you know, just standard method of solving things. And then I'm like, oh crap, now it's 2 hours. And so that's kind of what happened. So my writing period requires me to do what most historians tell you shouldn't, but I'm a historian, so I can gladly say I can break my own rule. Is I just follow every little nugget, and I find that stories come most from people. History is a series of stories about people and human failings and human emotions and human decisions. It's not just, and then stuff blew up. So when I start doing my writing and research, that can take 30 to 60 days, depending on how busy my day job is, tracking down books, tracking down source material, reading everything 10 times, making notes, going back, rereading. So that can take 30 to 60 days in my off time. And on those days when I'm really writing, people know, they just know me, don't fucking bother me. Because I am just in my little hole and I'm reading. And if you touch me, I'll bite you. I get very, very confrontational when I'm writing. I stomp around the house like Hunter S. Thompson. I am just absolutely unapproachable. But once reading's done, I then show Mike the script. Mike's the editor. And that's when we get into, okay, what art do we have available? And the problem is then this opens a can of worms, because you start getting into the 1980s art areas. And if you ever want to see how that looks, you know, you can go look up people like Snord's Irregulars and stuff like that, where it's just, why does this look weird? Why does this look bad? Why does this look like it was, no, why? And, you know, that's where George Ledoux and I were doing those art streams, where we were just tearing it apart, because yeah, it's very 1980, much like anything from that era. Yeah. Cyberpunk and GURPS and everything else is similarly wacky. So the art thing is where Mike takes over. While Mike is doing his art search and starting to find the art assets we can use, resizing them, changing them, modifying them, and putting down a timeline, I then record, in that same span of early initial art search, my voiceover, which can take forever. The unedited voiceovers are hilarious, because in the middle of it, I'll stumble over a word and just yell, fuck, and then I will have to start over. So then we edit down the voice, editing down the voice, putting it on the timeline. That takes a few days. Once that's all as we need it, we then put the art over it. This is Mike for 2 to 3 weeks of doing that. Then we do our first watch through. First watch through is where we're making notes. We're like, okay, we need to transition here. We need some background effects here. Oh, it'd be cool to have this happen here. We need motion here. We need this there. And we start doing the George Lucasisms, where Mike is sitting in the chair running the booth, and I'm sitting right behind him like the rear gunner on a World War II fighter bomber. And I'm just sitting there going, no, we do this and we do that. And, you know, we start going back and forth about everything we're trying to do. And that is back and forth. It's several iterative takes and watchings of it, and that can take several weeks. When we get near the end, that's when we do the commercials. That's when we do our final watch through. That's where we do scoring, which I score the TechStocks BattleTech. That's where we also reach out to people we want to collaborate with, like George Ledoux, who's fucking hilarious. Because you can just tell him, say, I need you to act drunk and read all these crazy things. And he'll do it with a smile. He really launches into it. He loves his fan. But we, once we get near the end, we're very exhausted because these final few cuts, our final few passes where we're just tuning stuff up can take weeks. And so from start to finish, you're looking at 1500 to 1800 man hours of work.
Yeah. It's, and you know, and just from my experience with Renegade HPG, the editing is tough. You know, it's just the respect that I've developed for people who do that for a living, and just, you know, to watch the same thing over and over and over again in the cut, you know, and then every once in a while you have a software failure, at least I do. It's heartbreaking.
We've had that on TechStocks BattleTech. We've lost days worth of work before. We've lost projects. We've had stuff crash. We've had commercials tear up. And it's one of those things where we just start tearing our hair out. Because, you know, after 1,500, 1,800 hours of work, we had a disaster when we did the part two of Exodus to Elementals. YouTube throttled us because we had like 2,500 people watching. And they said, well, this guy's not a grade A streamer, so we need to throttle that. And it was down to 144p and skipping around. And people still had our back, which is hugely humbling.
Yeah, and I mean, I transitioned to this. You know, my own professional work is in athletics, and you know, I kind of dove into this. I was doing podcasts, talking with kind of influential and kind of veteran coaches in the sport, and it was like, well, why don't I do this for BattleTech? It'll be fun, and just the receptiveness of the community is so much different, and it's so encouraging and welcoming. It's been very rewarding and fun. Kind of doing this stuff on the side, and you know, I have more fandoms than just BattleTech, of course. You know, Star Wars being top among there, and you know, and involved with lots of groups on Facebook, and the mood, you know, and the character of the BattleTech groups is just so much more positive and wholesome than a lot of the other ones, and it's fun. It's a fun universe and fun community to be a part of.
I find that. You're absolutely, absolutely correct on that. BattleTech fan base is the only thing that's kept BattleTech alive. Through good times, through bad, through Clicky Tech, through the Jihad, through all of these things where people just throw their arms up and say, ah, great. And bad video games and good video games and good times and bad. BattleTech's community is the bedrock that sustains it. And you can walk into any store where they're playing BattleTech and say, I want to play BattleTech, and they will coach you. They will help you out. If you walk into a 40K game, they'll tell you to wait in line. Mm-hmm. The BattleTech people will be like, oh, what's your name? Please come join our herd. Please, you wayward soul, let us bring you in.
Definitely. And it's and I'm looking forward to, you know, quarantine or pandemic restrictions to end, and we can all kind of bring all our Kickstarter swag out into the real world.
Oh, yeah. I think this year has certainly been a trial, certainly, but I think that once everything is good and well in the world again, that BattleTech nerds will come out from their prep bunkers and have some new minis to show for their time indoors and share it with the world.
Yes. And you were talking about your team, about, you know, Mike, and then, you know, the collaborators, you know, bringing on between, you know, George and, you know, guys like Eldon and DC.
Oh, Eldon is so fun, and I love Bruins. DC is awesome.
Yeah, I put out a ton of content, you know, with Dan lately, and I've had a ton of fun doing it. Like we were talking about before we recorded, is listening to Dan talk about BattleTech, you know, and just to hear just that kind of creative, genius in there, is kind of a savant in terms of kind of, you know, translating, you know, BattleTech world to the visual medium and understanding it and the atmosphere. And it's been a ton of fun. And I love, you know, the art side of things. You know, every time I sit down with an author, you know, it's, you know, Ben Blaine and Mike Stackpole and Bob Shred so far, and actually finally connected with Bill Keith, and we're going to record next month. And, you know, I always ask him about kind of the art and cover art, because, you know, you had indicated, there's some failings in the BattleTech art, but there's some glorious stuff out there as well.
There's style and substance, because some of it is like mural paintings that you'd put up in a church, and some of it is like stuff you'd see airbrushed on the side of a van. you know, and there's a bit of contrast. They're both cool.
Yeah.
If just you in gave, different ways.
Yeah. If you gave your 8-year-old an airbrush, then yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I understand why. I'm not trying to shit on these guys. It was literally, they probably were sitting there trying to make their way as a young artist. And someone came in and said, "Hey, you like drawing robots? Yeah. You want to draw 100 of them in 5 hours?"
Exactly. And it blows me away. Just the, you know, the volume of content the guys produce, you know, even now at CGL, you know, when they announced the new Battle of Tukiad source book, you know, I'm just sitting there, it's like, where are you guys finding the time? You know, they're like, yeah, we just decided to double the size and make it an entire book instead of just the, you know, source book.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, and just the volume of stuff they produce, and kind of looking back in the old days, and just like everybody seems to do everything, you know? And so, yeah, it's impressive. But you know, with guys like DC out there and Eldon, you know, they both have very unique styles. They're both very very invigorating and new, and even beyond that, you know people, you know, certainly HBS, you know, and Piranha have done a lot to bring in good artistic talent into the universe, whether it's, you know, guys like Mike McCain, or you know letting Alex Glacius kind of run rampant, or someone like Jin Ravana getting out there.
These supremely talented people, and you can't hold them down. You just have to let them loose. And when they do, my God, when they find what they're good at, they will paint a world. It's so amazing. It kind of reminds me of the renaissance of BattleTech, in many senses, especially artistically speaking, is so amazing to see. Because for a long time, things were kind of static, especially with the, you know, closing of FASA, and then, you know, things kind of going more or less on the back burner. But when you look at the crazy stuff that's starting to come out in this renaissance, I feel very privileged, regardless of everything else in the world that's going on, to be alive now to see it. I know a lot of people who sat through the dark years of BattleTech, when people said, "Oh, this game's dying, it's dying," and now they're laughing and pointing and filled with joy again. And you see some of the old graybeards, you know, coming out and being like, "I knew it was gonna come back," you know, and they're teaching their kids this game. And I've seen people bonding, multiple generations of fans in the same family now. That's so cool.
Definitely. Now, do you, you know, kind of, in that, do you have some of your favorite art pieces that kind of stand out, some favorite artists, you know, from?
I'm going to sound really biased, but my favorite shit that stands out right now is their current run of cover art for their novels has been so on point. I also really, really love the work of my people, Spacer, Eldonius, and Bruins, because they looked at, like, you take the Mackie, which is like, you know, the awkward trash can with dick guns. And and it just looks like someone drew it in a minute based on an egg timer. And then they take that and they reimagine it. And so you have like Eldonius, who draws the combat version of it, where it looks weathered and it's kicking Kirita tanks apart. And he turns that into a copy of a magazine, you know, Death Walked on Two Legs. And he makes it look like something out of the 70s. And I go, "Oh, that's amazing." And then you got DC Bruins, who builds the prototype of it. In the beginning of that episode, the line art of the Mackie was Bruins. I said, "I need orthographics. I need blueprints." That whole Metal Gear Solid theme thing was Mike coming up with the idea of, "I love MGS. You know, I want to do this whole nod to it and make it very 1980s. And I said, "Yeah, let's do that. That sounds dumb. I love it." And then you have Bruins come in and do those perfect orthographics, and he captured that beautifully. So now we have the Mackie in prototype, and we have the Mackie in its full regalia production model, and then you have Spacer in between, who has drawn the really good stuff for the action. And having all of these people who don't just reiterate the same thing but breathe new life into it from new angles, making this stuff and coming up with it in my head and saying, "Here's how the scene I want," and then they make it, is insane. That's like Star Trek replicator crazy, where someone's like, "Oh yeah, T-bone steak, perfectly well done." And bop, there it is. And you're like, "What? This is crazy."
And then tell me about how did you connect with George? You know, was he, you know, it, it's hard to believe George didn't know BattleTech before he started. Is he just coming in cold?
I found George has a production company.
Right. Yep.
And because I looked at George Ledoux's IMDb and there was this production company, so I called in, and he's like, "Hey, who's this?" And I said, "George," and he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "George Ledoux," and he goes, "Yeah." And I said, Duncan Fisher, and he's like, "Hello there," you know. And I was like, "Oh my god, yes, I need to hire you for a thing on YouTube." It's like, I don't know. And I talked him into it, and since then we've been pals. We just talk back and forth. He's a really cool guy.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's he's got some fun videos out there. You know, I was watching the one where he was doing the audiobook for Far Country.
Oh,
hilarious.
He can do a million voices.
Yeah.
He does some really fun stuff. He was all the voices in the game Majesty, and he's got a huge, long, varied voice acting career. So anyone out there with anyone out there who wants to hire George, I definitely go recommend checking out his IMDb and finding his company, because he's a master voice actor, and he also does a lot of audio engineering on his own stuff, and he makes it sound great.
Awesome. Yeah, it was. It's very easy to find, you know, for people, you know, if anybody needs voiceover out there, but and easy to access too. And what about Mike? Is Mike someone that you knew, you know, beforehand, or did you guys just connect through BPL?
We connected through a mutual friend, and this mutual friend says, "You gotta check this stream out." And I'm a weird guy. I'm very old school. I like books over TV. I don't watch a lot of streams, despite making YouTube. YouTube's my therapy. That's my creative thing. But I don't watch a lot. And I don't like browse Imgur or what it, if people still do that. I'm not a Reddit guy. I tend to do gaming over the internet, and that's and YouTube, and that's pretty much it. And so, this friend of mine said, "You got to check this stream out." And I was like, no. And they said, "No, you'll love this stream." So I tune into this stream, and it's three guys sitting around on a couch, Wayne's World style. They have like five people watching, and they're giving it their all. They have all their heart with them, and they are acting like they are having the most fun in the world. And I said, "This has got to be an act." So I watched another stream. Nope, same things. Three friends sitting on a couch, shooting the shit and yelling at these old NES games. And I was like, "This looks so fucking fun." So I started talking to him. I said, "Your stream is great. It's genuine. You guys are just genuinely good friends having fun playing games, whatever. I mean, just whatever. Point and click games, bizarre, awful action games, whatever. Not trying to chase trends, not trying to chase what's popular, but just being themselves and living in the moment." And so I started talking to him, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm an editor." And I was like, "I edit for shit. I need an editor." And then it just serendipity, man. The universe does provide.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm looking for my own serendipity, because you know, my editing skills only go so far. But you know, I did have an idea when I was talking to Bruins in our last episode. We were talking about you know, Blaine's short story from the first Shrapnel, where Paul Moon sends his elementals down to the Curie to planet, and they stomp some tanks, and I had an idea to do like to record my own little audiobook of that, and I was telling DC about the scene where the elementals kind of emerge out of this napalm forest, very angry with a bunch of you know, tankers who are smoking their cigarettes, patting themselves on the back, and trying to kind of produce some art for that. So you know,
that sounds like that would be fucking a baller.
Simple to edit too.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, you were mentioning before, you know, kind of your profession outside is historian. And so tell me a little about kind of how that's leveraged into kind of, you know, inspiring a lot of stuff, and how much that you're drawing from, you know, that knowledge and that work outside to kind of produce these episodes.
One of my degrees is in history. I was a freelance historian, which most historians out there are laughing because they know that pain all too well. Because if you say, I have a history degree with honors, they're like, oh, so you're unemployed.
Yeah.
which was true. So I was doing freelance pickup, historical and archival work. I've worked with a lot of archives, done a lot of freelance research. And I kept trying for years and years and years to get a job as just even a museum docent. And it's really cutthroat because a lot of people are interested in history, but working as a historian is kind of hard. And so freelance history is a lot of stuff like, oh, find out if my family ever was royalty. And you know, you look at them and you're like, no. And so it's a lot of dumb, annoying stuff that is just miserable. But when it came down to BattleTech, I said, someone should talk the history of this. And a friend of mine said, BattleTech history is boring as fuck. It's just stompy robots. And I said, oh yeah, well, what's good lore? And he goes, oh, Warhammer 40K. And I said, oh, you mean slab chest Brondo comes down from the sky on his jetpack and has a sword that's as tall as the sky and cleaves 100 people apart? Yeah, fucking riveting. And so he goes, well, why don't you prove me wrong? And I have. And so Starts BattleTech comes out of spite in part to prove this Warhammer 40K guy a bit wrong. I still like 40K. I just think their newer stuff is awful because it's like, we need something bigger than or better than Space Marines. Okay, what's your idea? What if we made them larger? And you're like, no, that's fucking dumb. Bullets hit things that stick out. And so So at any rate, I do leverage a lot of my historical chops for it. And I find a lot of fun in it. I find a lot of fun in being able to use those long beat up skills of, you know, digging into people's historical past to prove that they are just as mundane as the rest of us.
Yeah, and on the Warhammer, I'm not a Warhammer player, but I did catch, you know, I did stumble upon the Astartes series on YouTube, which was
phenomenal, which
was enjoyable, and I feel like that's like if you give DC Bruins a budget and let them go,
that's what that would be.
He would similarly, you know, kick the butt of that as
oh yeah, with the, absolutely. The and the one thing I'll point out about Astartes, it's so fucking good, but it's all one dude. And I just would like to point out for any of the Games Workshop guys out there who are like, Tech said not love 40K and are tearing their hair out. Mm-hmm. Go into much more detail in the podcast. Save you the semantics. But the Astartes was one dude with passion. And Games Workshop had like millions of dollars and made their own Space Marine movie. And put those two side by side and you can see where passion outclasses money and incompetence.
Yeah.
Love is everything for a fanboy like you or I.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it definitely shines in Bruins' work. I love Freehead. I've watched it more times than I can count, and every time I watch it, it still like hits me hard. And that's, I mean, you know, who cares if the shots are finished? There's always people who are like, well, when the Frenish one coming? I was like, dude, the story is there.
It grips you. Awesome. The pieces are there. The brain fills in.
And you know, going back to the kind of the BattleTech and the history, you know, there's a lot that I've caught that it's just it's hit me in new ways. And I've talked about this in several of my other podcasts, but some of the insights that you brought into it, you know, from the history side, you know, the one that stands out is understanding why the Inner Sphere went back to kind of this this blood-based rule. Exactly. And how it's related to communication, you know, and just the ability to kind of move from one place to another and get to one place to another. And for me, you know, giving me that epiphany of realizing, okay, that's why, you know, democracy, when it's have worked in the 1400s, you know, it's just like, you need a certain level of, you know, of communication and expediency in there. And it's, and insights like that has been really, really fun for me, you know, listening to you talk about, you know, kind of the Mad Cat and the kind of analogy between the tiger and the Sherman and production and kind of, you know, why, or just the clan war machine in general fails, regardless of the quality of the technology.
Well, right.
I mean, it's been fun. Yeah.
If you can build like one super weapon, that's cool and all. But if it's all handmade and then has to be trucked at the front, the enemy can just shit out okay weapons. There's a problem there. And that's, you know, understanding industrial base and industrial factoring and how things scale with that. Because I didn't have a lot of armchair historians going, well, Tex, actually, it would be more apt to say, and I'm like, just calm down, because I'm trying to paint with broad strokes here. Because if I go, well, technically, if we look at the 88 millimeter gun and then, you know, start looking at glasses, plate armor, and then doing all these calculations, you're going to get lost 3 hours in. So I am using my historian chops, but I'm also trying to make sure that I am talking to people from a point of view that is common sense, rather than something that's just some preening asshole, showering useless knowledge down to people. So, I mean, part of that does go back to being a historian, like talking about the bottleneck of communication. The reason democracy didn't work in the 13 to 1400s, it's easy to get a room to agree to some common principles. But when you have to have representation across a very broad area, you know, like a country, and communication slow, you can't go, hey, should we raise taxes to pay for new roads and then wait 3 years for a response? You need unilateral rule, and then you need local rulers who are empowered to rule with absolute authority. And so that's where you see this neo-feudalistic thing. But also, you have to point out that humans tend to be traditional. We love tradition. I mean, look at Christmas. Let's assemble a bunch of people in a room and open things that we probably can't afford and hand them around and sing songs and listen to some weird 1950s music while a log burns, regardless of how hot it is. You know, it's one of those things. We love tradition. We did it because our parents, and some things on a long enough time scale, become very normalized.
Now, are there any kind of pockets in the BattleTech universe that you're particularly fascinated with that you haven't had a chance to address yet?
Yeah, that is going to be a long answer. I want to talk about Clan Wolverine. I want to talk about, in detail, a lot of the hidden history that's kind of hinted at here and there. Mm-hmm. A lot of Comstar's dealings, a lot of the things that maintain the balance of power throughout the Inner Sphere. A lot of the small and interesting things that go on behind the scenes of every big war, the setups to wars are just as important as to who killed what and why. One of the little things I found is where you find the Director General Cameron almost got killed during the years of the Mackey production. And you find out the person who was sent to investigate as part of their, you know, intelligence service is Lady Terrence Ameris, who then relocates to the Rimworld's Republic, which then creates the Ameris line, which then creates the Ameris coup 100 years later. And you find all of these little tidbits. So I find the more I sift, the finer the powder. And I can absolutely just dive into the craziest stuff, but I often don't know what I want to explore until I look at it.
And it is amazing how extensive and tied into it it is. And it's just so much credit to the people that have produced it. And one of the things that, you know, when I was having my conversations with the authors, and particularly when I was talking to Bob Charette, and I was kind of, you know, I came in with this expectation of having this talk about this, like, this grand collaboration between all the creators and this outline, which they seamlessly weave together, and was just kind of like, as I questioned, as I was not getting kind of the responses I expected, it was occurring to me that it was, there was no grand kind of coordination, that it was kind of this, you know, what turned out to be, you know, kind of started to reveal itself more when I was talking to Stackpole, was just this very, very, precise and tactical outlining, you know, of key events, and then a willingness to truly kind of let the artist take it. And, you know, as you were talking about with, you know, just letting guys like Eldon and DC, you know, off the leash to kind of use their creativity. But, you know, there hasn't seemed to be any kind of micromanagement from whether it's FASA or CGL in terms of crafting the story. And it's really, you know, a credit to kind of the people who have written it of how nuanced and expansive and detailed it is, but it all fits together. Like there's not too many places where things just don't work. You know, you compare that to other expansive universes, like, you know, like a Star Wars, which I mean, granted is a, you know, a monster compared to the Dormouse that is Battletech, but it is fascinating how many things tie into each other.
Star Wars also has succeeded in becoming part of everything by just sheer merchandising. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't ignore the multi-billion dollar giant that is Star Wars, but also by the same nature, have you seen the latest few films? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to be said about volume and speed, but mm-hmm. there's also a thing called standards. And
yeah,
Battletech has more often than not done well, with a few minor exceptions. Not personally a fan of the Jihad personally, but there's more often than not, most of the things are quite good.
And I think that another cool thing about Battletech is it's always moving forward. You know, there's not attempts to kind of go back and reboot and restart. It's like, all right, well, that was a misstep. What's next? You know, and sometimes what's next isn't great. You know, the Jihad was bumpy. Let's go in the Dark Ages. Oh, or Republic of the Sphere. Oh, but it's just like, oh, well, that's it. Let's move on. And now we got the Elcon So that's a credit to them and just that willingness to kind of push through and continue creating and not second guess what's happened in the past, because, you know, that's how life works.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I like is you end up with, they say, okay, well, this is the Jihad. But then they also release the, Jihad Secrets book? So they start hinting at, maybe that's not exactly what happened. Maybe that's what was said. Mm. And so they kind of create some of this, you know, interesting what if. And I like that idea. Yeah. They start casting doubt. They say, like most things in history, like if there is a plague in history, the historical record's going to get a little choppy. So if there's these grand disasters where a few key events can be said to happen, this did blow up, there was fighting here, there was a war. But then you find the records of history and data, especially one communicated on the FTL network of the HPGs, you find that that has been shattered or broken in multiple pieces. Then you start to get into, well, what is known in fact slowly becomes legend. And you go, well, we're pretty sure this is what happened. And we know these key events certainly did, but do people have something to gain by life? And so that I like that. That turns my little internal crank there. So I'm not a fan of the Jihad, but that Secrets book made me go, well, wait a second. This could be imperfect history.
Hmm. And I think one thing I catch, you know, myself when I'm thinking out about, you know, that, you know, just everything that goes on is it's so hard for just us in our life of, you know, living in our city, in our state, in our country, maybe in our world, of conceiving a 1,000-2,000 year diameter, you know, universe of planets and cultures and events, you know, and just kind of how much can happen and truly, yeah, how much information can be skewed and misperceived and how much that opens up possibility for storytelling.
Oh, of course.
Is fun and cool. You know, one thing for me that I always kind of, that I'm fascinated with is kind of at the borders of kind of, you know, of exploration, you know, so things like the Explorer Corps and, you know, just kind of getting out there and, you know, what are those worlds that are outside of kind of the inner sphere? What's going on over there? And, you know, even beyond the kind of the periphery states and,
certainly.
That's kind of a curiosity that I would love to see explored more.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's that notion of big, scary universe. What's mm-hmm. out there? What's really out there? Because if you look at the inner sphere, it's a dot, and there's this thing called the Milky Way galaxy that's around it. And it's a dot.
Yep.
And you know that when there was this human diaspora that went out in all directions, there were people like, yeah, we'll be back someday. And then just left. They were like, they're out there looking for free real estate so far away that no one can ever fuck with them. Mm-hmm. And if I had to write a new bad guy for Battletech, it would be guys from out there. It would be guys who went out there in the 2300s and started an empire. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly starts coming back. And people are like, uh-oh.
Definitely. That's where my imagination goes. I mean, if you can take, you know, the size of the Exodus fleet on for a year plus and find a place, you know, imagine what you could do with just a few thousand people, you know, without the political infighting and stuff. And just because that's one thing about the jump drives, right? The jump drives, they're solar powered, you know, there's not an end. I mean, as long as you keep the technology moving, if BattleTech shows us anything, it's that you can see technology going forever. Well, right. How far do you jump? You just keep jumping until, you know, you find a paradise planet.
Well, right. And imagine you have, instead of the SLDF fleet, which is this very cosmopolitan mishmash of all these different cultures, and now without a cause, imagine if you had a fleet that was unified behind something like a philosophy or a religion. Mm-hmm. Say you have some religious movement and these guys are going, we're going to go find the promised land as foretold by the prophet. And you just jump for generations out into deep space with a colony ship that can grow its own food and has its own spares and can repair and resource on the way. Yeah, you could go off the edge of the earth where it says here be dragons and just keep going. And that would be very interesting to find stuff beyond.
So those are some of our musings. What are some of the feedbacks or the requests that you get from the fans? You know, what are some of the things that they would like to see for future episodes?
One of the things people ask is I do put out polls saying like, here's what I'm working on. And then I put them on my Patreon. Here's the order of what I'm working on. And once I get near the bottom of that list, I'll put out polls and so on. Mm-hmm. But you know how some people, just, you know, they go, I'm not going to read anything. So I'm going to stand out in front of the building that sells sandwiches and yell, I want a sandwich at the building. And so I get a lot of those. They're usually, I call them drive-by posts, where someone will just go, where's the Atlas episode? And I will just link it to them. Yeah. I'll just go, here it is. And they're like, do a longer one. And I'm like, okay.
Change the speed. Change it to 3/4 speed.
Yeah, there was, yeah. Well, there was a guy who said, we get a lot of fun comments, like, you know, people saying all this great stuff. Then we get some really fun screwball comments where a guy's like, if you want to make these faster, you should cut them into 10-minute segments. And I'm like, well, it's actually kind of harder on an assembly line to build 100 tiny models of a car than one car. You know, it's a lot harder to make 100 individual slices of bread and wrap them up and package them than it is to bake a loaf and cut it. And so you try to explain that to people. But when it comes down to requests, it's everything under the sun. Everything from all eras. A lot of people have a lot of ideas, and I'm glad to have that feedback. Usually when I post the topics, I'll say, look, I could do a history topic, or I could talk vehicle, or I could do just a mech, or I could do this or that. And usually I'll put it into two people's or two groups' hands. I'll say on Patreon, the people who fund all this, and very humbled and thankful for that, I will say, what kind of thing do you want? History, vehicle, mech, and they'll vote. And then I will go over to the YouTube side and I will say, okay, we have chosen a vehicle. Which of the vehicles would you like to see? And I post all that up. And then that gives the necessary direction, and it's a wide area of people providing input, and it becomes, you know, somewhat like a collective consciousness, a collective clamoring. One of my favorite sayings is, none of us is as dumb as all of us. And I'm more than glad to reach out for people and have them give me feedback.
Yeah, it's until you don't let them steer, you just let them give ideas, you know.
Well, it's one of those things where if you do exactly what strangers ask of you, like let's say you're a restaurant and you make a really good grilled cheese sandwich, and that's your passion, grilled cheese sandwiches. and a guy comes in and starts pounding on the counter and says, I want some fucking spaghetti, you're not going to become a spaghetti restaurant because most people are happy with what you make. Now, it's interesting to hear that point of view, and you will listen to it because maybe someday a guy will come in and say, what if you made a foot-long grilled cheese sandwich? And you're like, oh, well, hey, that's an idea. But you have to kind of stay in your own lane. I mean, you're making a podcast. You're interviewing people. What if someone came up to you and says, you know what I want to see you do is sing? And you're like, but I don't want to sing. It's questions and answers. Well, what if you sing the questions? And you're like, but why? And as much as someone wants to see that, you know what you need to do. And you know where your strengths are. Yeah. And it's fine to try new things and hear all these interesting ideas put in, but designed by a committee, especially if you put none of your own drive in it, the project manager, and put none of your own insight into the writer or artist or, you know, whatever your craft is, if you just design by blind input, you're going to end up building that car off the Simpsons, you know, the Homer. It's just going to be an amalgam of shapes and misery.
Definitely. I mean, you know, following your own path and kind of staying with it has been always key, you know, and it's a tough balance between kind of getting the feedback and incorporating the feedback.
Well, of course.
But I've always felt, you know, like you said, you know, you do the things that you like and you do them well, and the passion will bring the people. It's like when you try to kind of accommodate an audience.
Well, sure.
And then you're going to stray off your path.
Of course. And I mean, that's just hands down. Like if you wanted the big clicks or big views or what have you, you'd go, hey, I'm just going to talk about drama, or I'm going to talk about something that everyone loves, like the latest hot movie, or I'm going to do, you know, game reviews on these big AAA games, or, you know, any of the big buttons that you can press to be as most relatable as possible. But that's not you. You know what you like. I mean, if you like Lord of the Rings, you're not going to suddenly start talking about Faerun and D&D. You love Battletech. You're not going to say, well, Star Wars is more money. You're going to stay with what drives you and makes you want to keep doing it. You have to be kind of a slave to your passion.
Definitely. And talking about kind of maxing those passions, you mentioned many times that the awesome is number one for you, you know, kind of bringing, let's kind of maybe get away from the podcast and talk a little about kind of the experience at tabletop, what is your kind of primary source of exposure to Battletech? Because I'm always amazed by the all the different, you know, vectors people take into the universe.
I used to be a tabletop nerd, like a lot of tabletop. Then I got into RPG, Dungeons and Dragons, mostly, but a smattering of everything. And then I did a little bit of Battletech in college. And then most recently, I will play Battletech games over Mega Mech, or I will play them over Tabletop Simulator. We've played quite a few of those on the guy who plays the voice of Discount Dan. GM'd and put up the Battle of Tukiad for us on his channel, which is that series is called Discount Tukiad, and that's pretty fucking hilarious to watch because it's just us fumbling and yelling at each other. But I mainly these days, because of my very, very restrictive hours and what I can do, I typically play Battletech through like HBS's Battletech. Which I've got a series going on now for that. I'm more into that at the moment, but if I could find a job that was less hours, I'd certainly do that, more in tabletop.
I just downloaded HBS maybe like 3-4 weeks ago and play it. And for me, video games are a dangerous door to open because I'll kind of go in a little too deep and set life aside. But fortunately, I managed it this time. But yeah, I got a little farther and I was struggling with it. It had been a while since I played, and I was kind of confused at the outset because I knew enough, you know, about kind of the story. And then when it was like, okay, well, that dropship's destroyed. Did I do something wrong? Did I like kick me into like the DLC that I've downloaded? And yeah, I went through the first 2 hours very confused. But it was cool to kind of get out there and put
it's a different way of experiencing it. It's a little simplified. And I know video games are a huge pull because I had friends of mine in college who were like, let's play this game called World of Warcraft. And they're still playing it. And it's like, you know, you reconnect with those people and over a decade later and all they talk about is World of Warcraft. You're like, well, how's your job doing? And they're like, oh, you know, still living with mom. And you're like, oh shit. Wow. I know all too well, because I almost fell in that hole with MMOs myself. And that's why I'm so fearful of stuff like that. Even more recently, stuff like Star Wars, The Old Republic, I get kind of terrified of MMOs because I start to get sucked into them. And then I'm like, did I put on 10 pounds?
Yeah.
Where did all these empty cans come from?
What's the date?
What year is it, traveler?
Yeah, I've fortunately stayed away from MMOs, but I definitely remember, you know, weeks of my life disappear into, you know, like Knights of the Old Republic, you know, and you know, back in the day, or Mass Effect, which were glorious weeks, don't get me wrong, but at least they had an end.
Yeah, and games can just suck you in. They're kind of engineered to do that now anyways.
They are.
They'll have the banging intro and you'll feel like a hero, and then it'll be like, go fetch me 40 goat bladders, and you're like, oh no, I've reached the padding section. Or with me, I play a lot of strategy games, so I'll be playing, you know, Crusader Kings 3, and I'm like, well, I'll stop playing when I can figure out how to marry my sister, or, you know, something terrible.
Definitely. Yeah, lately, last Christmas, I asked my girlfriend for the new Star Wars game for Xbox, and I really wanted it, but I've Fallen Order, that's what it was, and I have yet to open it because I've yet to be in a place in my life where I can give up a week to play it. But that's all good. It's there waiting for me when I'm ready.
Yeah, and that's just the way you got to look at it. It's like a fine cigar. You don't have to smoke them all now. You can let it mellow a little bit.
Definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to get into HBS slowly, you know, with a little bit of maturity, you know, but give it like 2 hours once a week or something and, you know, let it simmer.
That's how, I mean, with any games nowadays, because when you're a kid, you know, you have to do what your parents say. You know, it's like, well, you got to brush your teeth. You have to go to bed. You have to go to school. And then when you're an adult, you start finding, oh, I can do whatever I want, but I won't. I'm going to go to bed early. I've got a mortgage, you know, so you start thinking about all those fears. Like, well, I do have a car payment. I don't want to take that away. And I better pick up some hours.
Definitely. Well, for, you know, for upcoming episodes, are we focusing more on kind of the broader stories, or are we kind of doing some, you know, shorter mech summaries there?
Well, the next one's the Rifleman, and I promised to Mike, I said, this one will be shorter, and it's still an hour and change. And then I'm going to have to hammer out some classic mechs. They are way overdue. So there's going to be the Warhammer, the Marauder, and then I'm going to have to talk about I'm gonna branch it out at that point, but I need to do an episode on the Charger because people don't understand it, and I do. I know where its magic place is. I know what it can do very well. But a lot of people go, it's dumb, and I go, no, it can do one thing real good, one thing. You know, it's like a cheese grater. You don't use it to hold soup. There some things have a specific purpose, and I'm gonna let people know what that is. But after that, I'm probably gonna touch on a lot of things related more to the history and backstory, or I might even branch out into vehicles. At that point, I'm gonna let people vote, and we'll see what crazy ideas people come up with. Because as much as I was joking about it earlier, I do read every comment. And I do respond as much as I can. And I do care what people think, because sometimes you'll find rabbit holes that you didn't think about.
Yeah, the addition of perspectives, just kind of, you know, even just as kind of a little food for thought, not to necessarily use that cliche, but to steer the thoughts and kind of feed ideas that you wanted to come up with. They're very helpful for that. Yeah, you're talking about kind of the unseen, you know, it's been great to see them kind of coming back in and be able to kind of talk about them freely or play with them freely, you know, and even on the tabletop playing with, you know, not only the new Catalyst miniatures, but, you know, I've been enjoying the Kids Logic ones, even though they'll kind of break if you breathe on them, you know, and sometimes they break before you even get them. So,
but
it'll be fun to get those episodes.
I agree. And I'm really looking forward to tackling the classics. It's just going to be scary. Because they are the classics. It's if you do a history talk on something people forgot about, people are forgiving. But if you talk about like the poster boy and you're like, well, it's not all it was cracked up to be, people will start throwing eggs and writing like Martin Luther's 95 thesis and nailing it to your door. So I have to do it well, and I have to make double certain I am accurate.
Now, for you, in terms of you know, the timelines that you're focusing on, you know, are you planning to kind of, do you keep that focus intentionally, kind of in that the Clan Invasion and before? Do you have an interest in kind of moving beyond that? You know, whether it's, you know, Civil War, Jihad in the future.
I may move beyond that, but that's the era I came up in, and so there's a lot to talk about there. And historians are notorious for finding little areas of history they fall in love with. So you'll find a World War II historian and not a World War II, Cold War, Korean War, Vietnam historian. And the more you study something, the more specific your study tends to be. So that's kind of that era and before is where I'm really comfortably versed in my research. But in time, anything is possible.
Yeah, and I find that's the same way. You know, I know, you know, for me, my introduction came from my stepbrothers, you know, when I was probably 11 years old, you know, and then I didn't really have much, you know, too many people to play with. And so it became the novels and kind of read through the novels. And I think I was up to I Am Jade Falcon before, you know, graduating high school and kind of moving on and then dropping it. So I was out for you know, pretty much everything that came beyond that, you know, all the jihad and the dark ages. And so, you know, for me, it's a, you know, my focus is kind of in, you know, in that 30, 25, 30, 50 range, not necessarily because of a distaste for the other stuff, but because, you know, like you said, I mean, that's where you cut your teeth, you know, and that's where kind of the birth of the passion came from. And so that's where the source of the passion is always going to be. But, there's definitely, you know, definitely an interest there in kind of the a summary for even for people like me, you know, that haven't been involved with those later eras. And there's definitely not a lot out there. So it'd be a you know, an area for anybody listening to kind of dive into and do some good lore videos while Tex focuses on what he knows and loves.
Indeed. I mean, it's like we say about, you know, the grilled cheese sandwich. I'm not about to start making spaghetti. So if someone else wants to get on that gravy train, by all means, full speed ahead.
Definitely. And one thing I did actually want to kind of ask more kind of on a content creator to another content creator, you know, in terms of kind of finding other people to kind of help and kind of, you know, work with you, you know, what are kind of, you know, what works for you, what in terms of kind of reaching out and connecting? And, you know,
I tend to find people who have the same kind of drive where you can tell they're not in it for the money. Mm-hmm. They're not in it to get famous. They're in it because they love it. And that impresses me more than anything. When someone's like, I fucking love this shit. And then, you know, I'm going to always work with people who have heart. I don't care if they're a fuck up. I don't care if they make mistakes. I don't care if they never finish anything. I love people who just have drive, who just have that deep well of passion for what they want to create. And they let nothing hold them back. They're like, well, sleep in this project. And they just go down that road at full speed. Those are the people I connect with. And I've met so many amazing people. And believe it or not, it's me, Mike the editor, and Goat the musician who does all the BattleTech music, all in one house. And so we can literally sit down and split a pizza and then just start coming up with dumb ideas. And we have a giant poster board and we just fill ideas on there and start storyboarding stuff and crazy shit. And that's what I love, is I find all these people who impress me with their passion. I don't care if they're imperfect or they're not knowledgeable or if they're not a grandmaster of their craft, but they will be because they care.
Yeah.
That is the biggest drive. I don't care if you're famous or well-paid or rich or poor, but if you have passion in your heart and you're willing to drive with everything and hold nothing back, I will infinitely respect.
Definitely. It's been fun. There's a reckless abandon to it for sure.
Absolutely.
I'm kind of doing all this. But well, let me, I'll just say thank you and kind of wrap up there and for kind of the official side of things. But it's been fun. We'll definitely have to do it again. And I'm looking forward to Rifleman up next and definitely more of the unseen in terms of those videos, because those are the ones that I grew up on. And
absolutely.
The images of the old school.
Oh, and I'm so glad you had me on this, because I was like, oh, cool, BattleTech podcast. And I was like, God, I wish I was famous enough to get on there. I really appreciate it. And anytime you ever want to have me back, that's fine.
Yeah, it's like you were saying, you know, it's the guests that I want are the passionate ones, right? The ones that kind of bring that to the community and kind of, you know, share it unabashedly. And because I think that's who people want to, that they have fun listening to that. And the comments that I've gotten, you're just like, man, I love people who love BattleTech talk about BattleTech, you know? And so it's nice to have the Mike Stackpoles, you know, but it's also nice to have the Michael Todds, you know, out there, you know, and just kind of geek out and just talk about it. And certainly kind of, so many people kind of listen and appreciate content that you're doing. And so I'm sure they kind of love to kind of, you know, hear the voice without the story and just kind of like hear what happens behind the scenes and hear the passion, you know, independent of a topic.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, you're 1,000% right on that.
Yeah. Well, on that, let's say thank you to everyone in the BattleTech community for listening and supporting both of us. You know, find Texon Black Pants Legion on YouTube. What social media tags do you have, Tex?
I have a Twitter, but it's only for shit posting. I just find terrible pictures that are cursed, and I just put them up there. And people do at me like, Tex, what do you think about this? And I'll like send them a picture of just some horrible thing, and they'll go, oh, God. And so the Twitter is my like pirate broadsides of anti-social media. But I tend to just stay on YouTube. That's where I am.
Awesome. Awesome. So YouTube and definitely Patreon if you want to kind of, you know, help fund the production of more awesome content, you know, pay for more great artists to come on.
Like, yeah, that's where all the money goes is art and production and taxes. So, but yeah, I keep like none of it. I just pay taxes out of it and I pour it all right back into where it needs to be, because this ain't my job. And I want to make sure it's a happy hobby, because when you start to see something as a job, it changes. And I'm very wary of that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's if it is a job, it's an awesome one and a fun one. So we appreciate the work. But yeah, thanks, Tex. And thanks, everyone, again, for listening. You can find Renegade HPG on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, though definitely Facebook, Instagram are my favorite sources. And of course, on YouTube. So thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Tex, again, for talking BattleTech.
No problem, bud. I'll be back anytime you have me.
Definitely. We'll do it again.